on Real Country 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
Good morning. It is 9:27. I'm Jeff, and hope you're having a good morning. Going to be talking today with 58th District Senator Terry Bryant in this morning to talk about things going on in the around the state of Illinois and around the 58th Senate District. And I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and get our first break out of the way. Then we will come back and talk with the senator. Welcome back. This is The People Speak. And again today, we're talking with Senator Terry Bryant. How are you doing this
morning? I'm good. You know, I told you I was going to roll in on two wheels, and I really did roll in on two wheels. So it's good to be here. I'm sorry I was dragging a little bit late this morning. I got a phone call right as I was leaving the office, and kind of goes into, I think, some of the stuff we might be talking about today. So there's a nasty rumor floating out there that there's going to be some prison closures. So I want to set everybody's mind at ease. First of all, that Menard is not in the mix anywhere. And I think that there is maybe, I'm going to try to look at some documents and stuff today. I think that there's a plan at two facilities maybe to tear down some old buildings. And I think the plan is to do some rebuild. So we're going to look at it very closely because sometimes this particular administration doesn't always tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, right? So we'll be looking at it. So anyway, if there are rumors floating around out there today, I know that there's a lot of listeners on here that work at Menard. No worries, folks.
Right. Real quick, because a question I had that I was going to ask, and Paul was in here the other day, and I was talking to him about, the governor just gave his budget address and all that and everything, and saying how great shape financially the state's in, we're going to have a balanced budget and all this. Can you kind of elaborate? I mean, that's not all that it seems to be at face value.
No, it's not. I mean, the state is in better shape now than it has been in a very long time. That is true, and it's evidenced by the fact that we did get an upgrade on our credit rating, which for the listeners, just know that, you know, just like when you go to get a credit card or go to the bank, you want to have the best credit rating you can have so that when you do have to borrow money or bond, in the case of the government, then you get the best interest rate possible. So that's good, but honestly, you know, that's being done on the back of the taxpayers, right? I mean, obviously, we've had increase in income tax. We had an increase in the motor fuel tax. You know, there's two competing plans for what we should do going forward to give some relief to consumers on gas, right? I mean, the governor's proposal is to do what he calls a pause on the automatic increase that would happen in July. That pause would be a hit of about $135 million to the road fund. Now, the voters of Illinois said very loud and clear that they wanted the lockbox in place. In fact, many people said that they didn't mind as much having to, you know, pay a little bit more for their gas as long as it went in somewhere where it could only be used for roads and bridges. Last year, the governor tried to dip into the road fund, and he got a resounding no. This year, he's doing it through a backdoor means, which is, again, what he called a pause on that automatic increase. IDOT is planning 5 and 10 years in advance. One of those plans is for Chester Bridge, right? So when the governor says there's a surplus of money, or I think the word he used was the road fund is flush with money, well, that's ridiculous to say the road fund is flush with money. You want to take a look at some of the roads around here. Go to DuCoin, going out of town on 51, where people have been calling the mayor there because their car's getting damaged by roads. So IDOT has to have the funds to do what they need to do. Now, let's take a look, because a lot of people will say, well, Republicans are just the party of no. They just say no to everything that Pritzker wants to do with no plan of their own. In this case, Republicans do have a plan, and I've posted that on my social media sites on a little graphic so it's easy to understand. The Republicans' plan, rather than pausing the increase in the motor fuel tax, basically are saying, let's reduce the sales tax that's on top of the motor fuel tax. I think in our interview last month, I told you I'd like to get rid of that sales tax on top of motor fuel altogether. But unfortunately, we're not able to do that right now. But we want to take 1% off for the next year, And that 1% would actually save consumers $200 million. So the governor says he's going to save consumers $135. Republicans are saying our plan saves $200 million, plus the additional part of that plan puts $85 million in additional money into the road fund. So it's a win-win, right? You're getting some relief from sales tax. The consumer is going to see $200 million of savings. The road fund is not harmed in any way. In fact, it's increased. And then on top of that, when you're talking about sales tax money, you want to make sure that local governments are not harmed.
Right.
So there's actually a portion of that that takes general revenue money and makes whole local governments. So it's win-win. So folks, there's multiple plans out there. Who knew that the Biden bucks were going to create such an inflationary environment that we're in? So people have to take this seriously, and we got to give the consumers some help.
We got a commercial break here. Let's go ahead and throw that in real quick, and we'll come back and talk some more with Senator Terry Bryant here on The People Speak right after this. And welcome back. Again, we're talking with 58th District Senator Terry Bryant, and we were just talking about Valentine's Day here, too.
Yeah, we put out an all-call to folks and said, you know, we wanted to be able to take Valentine's to assisted living and nursing homes, and we put it out throughout the district. We needed, for the places we wanted to go, we needed 1,900, and we got well over 2,200,
wow.
And there's still some coming in. So from now until Monday, we'll still be delivering some Valentine's to the seniors. And we're going to be able to do some places that we didn't even have on our list. So I really wanted to say thank you to everyone for their generosity. It's been the best outreach receipts that we've gotten since I've been in office. So kudos to everyone for participating, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone.
It sounds like an amazing project. You know.
Yeah, it was. You know, schools got involved,
right.
And I actually had some people whose kids were on virtual learning. And so they bought some Valentine's and had their kids at home do a bunch of Valentine's for us too. So they started coming in just huge boxes, and it's really fun. And the bright eyes of the seniors when you take that in, because often they think they're forgotten, and here they get these Valentine's that are really pretty cool.
Right. So what else we got going on the 58th?
So I think I heard some stuff this morning again in regard to crime in Illinois, and you know, I think, you know, we're quick here in this region to beat up on Chicago about almost everything, but in this situation it is warranted, because what's being the driving force on criminal justice reform, as it's called, or I think the misnamed Safety Act, really was driven by things that were going on in Chicago. And what we're finding now is that really anti-police bill, that pro-criminal, anti-victim bill, has backfired. And so we're seeing all this just massive crime in Chicago. Well, what does that really mean to us down here? What it means is it bleeds over. And, you know, I live in Murfreesboro, and I go to church in Carbondale. So, you know, that's on the Amtrak line. So if you live in any community that's on the Amtrak line, you're seeing an uptick in crime, which then bleeds over into other communities. So we, you know, anyone who follows the stuff that's going on, Crime Stoppers or anything that's going on in the Carbondale area, knows the increase in shootings and the increase in crimes there. That's a town I really love, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's criminal what's going on with the criminals.
Right.
And so that bleeds over then, because people find, you know, in these rural areas that they can make meth. They can do a lot of things undetected. And so we're seeing a lot of that bleed over to us. And then, of course, you know, we've got counties here we've got the mandates that are going to be coming soon on body cams and so forth, and having to keep that data. And there is no funding for it. So, again, Republicans came out with a package of bills that that actually does fund not just the body cameras, but how they'll have to keep that data going forward. We'll see if they pick up our bills or not. We also have some components in there that get a little more tough on crime when it's someone that is a repeat offender. Also, people who shoot police officers. I just heard from Darren Bailey yesterday that someone from his district, there was an officer that was killed in his district several years back, and the perpetrator of that crime, the murderer, the Prison Review Board released this past week. They told them, listen, here's the really egregious thing about it. The Prison Review Board told the family that the case would not be heard until March. And then they find out that the guy has been released with no notification to the family. And the family was prepared to go before them and give testimony in March. And here we're in February and the guy's been released. That's egregious.
Yeah. Not fair to anyone. I mean, not fair to the state, not fair to the family,
right,
especially.
Right, right. So I did want to give some folks an update on Chester Bridge because, you know, you had a couple right. callers, I think, last time. So it is progressing. There was a meeting in Chester just a couple of weeks ago. There were some state representatives there from the Perryville side. So Missouri was represented along with the mayor of Perryville, the mayor of Chester, and a lot of legislators from here in Illinois that represent Chester. And so we're just starting to talk to MoDOT about their responsibility. There were IDOT representatives there. So that's going to be progressing. We've started talking about naming the bridge, and we'd really like to name it the Don Welge Bridge. And, you know, there's a lot of fighting that goes on, believe it or not, when you go to name a bridge. And I can't remember which, it might be the Jerry Costello Bridge, you know, in St. Uh-huh. Louis. That required the congressional delegation to take that to D.C. In this case, it'll be state run, what the name is. And the good news is Illinois and Missouri agree with each other, and so we're in the process of getting letters of recommendation for that, so we can make those proposals, and, you know, we'll let folks know how that goes. But, you know, I think most people are not as concerned about what the name of the bridge is as they are about making sure that the bridge gets done. So right. we're moving in the direction for that. I know we always have questions about the Sparta shooting complex, so we're working with IDNR on some issues that are going on there. We want to make sure that that is showcased the way it should be showcased, that it gets the money that it needs to get. So we'll probably have some ongoing discussions in regard to budget proposals. Remember that the governor's budget address is his proposal for the budget, but the legislature sets what that budget is. So we are we as Republicans are trying to get a seat at the table. We're hoping that our counterparts on the Democrat side, both in the House and the Senate, will listen to our proposals. Again, especially when it comes to giving some relief to consumers, especially at the pumps. So the Republicans have a proposal that the governor should look at. It's reasonable. It makes sense. It gives him what he wants. So I think he has to decide, is this political or is this really about Illinois? Which kind of leads me to, I know it's your interview, but I'd like to lead into the mask issue. Okay. And so again, I would point people to my Facebook page and then also to my Twitter page, which basically kind of gives a breakdown of what the court said about masks and then what the governor is saying now. And basically what the court said was that if you were a part of the lawsuit, if you were named in the lawsuit, whether school or individual, then the schools are prohibited from telling you that you have to wear a mask. If you are not a part of that lawsuit, it leaves it wide open for schools to go back and make the decisions that they want to make, whether they want to do masks or not do masks. Or in a lot of cases, I know in Union County and Anna Jonesboro, they basically decided that they are not going to continue with a mask mandate. Some schools are basically telling their teachers and their students, if the students wear a mask, fine. If the students don't wear a mask, don't tell them that they have to. Parents who want their kids to wear a mask, tell their kids to wear a mask. Parents who don't want them to, tell them not. It puts everything back into the hands of the parents, which right. is where I want it to be. And I think, you know, it's interesting that the governor made February 28th the deadline. And someone asked me, why did I think that was the date that he picked? Because it's a pretty arbitrary date, uh-huh. unless you realize that President Biden gives his State of the Union address on March 1st. So perhaps the governor wants to get a little, you know, wants to at least be as reasonable as New York and New Jersey, who are getting rid of their mask mandate. So we're still going to be stricter in many cases than New York and New Jersey, which is just absolutely insane. So I would say again to the governor, please, you know, if folks want to wear masks, let them wear masks. If they don't want to wear masks, we're at a place where people can get vaccinated if they want to.
Right.
They should not have to get vaccinated if they don't want to. We're at a place where we now have treatments for this illness, and it's going to go on. We're going to see variant after variant after variant. It's time to move on. I hope the governor or his people are listening today and realize that we are so done with all of this.
Right. Well, like right now, I'm wearing one because I have bronchitis, but you know, I'm still, when you sound like this these days.
Sure, so I applaud you for making people feel more comfortable. Right. You know, as I said, I don't have one on right now, but if you wanted me to put one on, I would put one on. You know, I keep one with me. I'm a person of faith, and even in Scripture, you know, the Apostle Paul basically said, if it bothers someone that you eat meat, you know, because they think it's sacrificed, then don't eat meat, right? So I'm kind of the same opinion. I'm a person of faith. If it bothers someone that I'm around that I don't have a mask on, I'll be happy to put a mask on if it makes you feel better. But I don't want someone sitting on high who doesn't have any data to back up what they're saying. We had a meeting with IDPH prior to the governor's press conference, and multiple legislators on there asked IDPH, what is the data that you're using? Because 2 days ago you said masks were essential. 2 days later you're saying that you're going to start to back that down a little bit, but you've still never shown us any data. Where's the data that says that you should change now from this to this? We want you to change,
right?
But it's pretty hypocritical to say two days ago that you should still be wearing a mask. 2 days later, you're saying, no, you don't have to on this date, but you're not showing that there's been any change, any significant change at all. That becomes, I think I showed it as the governor seems to be following political science rather than medical science. Show me the medical science for why you kept us in masks, why you kept businesses shut down, why you continue to keep us on lockdown, why you're firing people from the Department of Corrections and Mental Health, and you're not showing the data. I'm still demanding that data, and everybody should be.
You know, and I've listened, you know, both sides, data, there's data on both sides. I mean, how do you determine, okay, well, you're right, you're wrong, you know, and it's like there's medical professionals out there, too, who have come out and said, no, this is not what we need to do.
And they're good professionals. Yeah. You know, the guy who, the scientist that developed the mRNA vaccines, the whole mRNA process said that the mRNA vaccines were supposed to be for senior citizens, for people who, and those who had comorbidities, right? That's who those vaccines were supposed to be for. They were not supposed to be for otherwise healthy individuals. And yet we are firing people from state jobs for not taking those vaccines when those people have turned in either medical requests for medical exemptions or religious exemptions, and many of them have still not had those exemption requests answered. You know, that's not fair either. And I want people to know who are working at those state agencies that there are still people like me who are fighting and basically saying to the governor, you're wrong. You're wrong for doing what you're doing. You know, early on in the governor's administration, I tried to be bipartisan. I tried to work with him on a lot of things, but I've come to really believe that he's a trust fund baby who doesn't live in the same world that we live in. You know, you can't just go and tell people because I said so.
Right.
That doesn't work with children. It's not certainly not going to work with adults. So the days of because I said so maybe could have happened for 30 days at the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was scrambling to try to find out what is happening, when we had massive deaths going on and so forth. We're almost 3 years into this now. People do not want to hear because I said so.
Right. The term that comes to my mind when I hear that is dictatorship, you know?
Yeah, and we live in a representative democracy. And, you know, when the governor does, I guess he doesn't want to hear the man on the street, but he should at least be wanting to hear from the people who are elected to be their voice.
Right.
Right. In a representative democracy, I'm the voice of the 58th Senate District, and I would like to have a civil conversation with him. He has not had a real conversation with me since the whole Confederate Railroad issue at the DuQuoin State Fair. Before that, he and I sat down twice in his office, just he and I and one of his staff, since that Confederate Railroad issue, where I simply asked that if you're going to cancel Confederate Railroad, cancel Snoop Dogg at the at the Springfield State Fair, an individual who had an album cover where he was wrapped in the Confederate flag on a slab with a toe tag that said Trump. That was offensive to me and offensive to a lot of the people that I represent. And you're not canceling Snoop Dogg, but you're canceling Confederate Railroad because the word Confederate is in their name. Okay, so we just want fair treatment. Mm-hmm. When people say, don't be so partisan, I don't want to be partisan. I represent Democrats and Republicans. I want to be fair to everyone. I want the governor to be fair to everyone. And many of his proposals are unfair to our region and unfair to the whole state. And I think Chicago is beginning to speak that out as well. They're beginning to say they're sick of the crime. They're sick of their cost for gasoline is higher than ours. Those are folks who can go to Indiana or Wisconsin, just like here we're going over to Missouri. You know, I want us to be able to fund our roads and bridges, but I don't want taxes on top of taxes on top of taxes. And that has to end.
Right.
Right. So now the governor is taking credit for the fact that we are in a better financial situation. And I don't remember him being around for the vote that we had to take to change the income tax, which actually put us into the better financial position that we're in now. He's taking credit for it, but didn't really take the hits for it, right? Yeah. So stop, and really quickly, Jeff, because I know we're going to run out of time. I want people to remember when I came into office, the budget was $32 billion. That was our income. My first year in office, you know, we had the budget impasse from 2015 to 2017 and a half, right?
Right.
At 2017 and a half, the budget that ended the budget impasse was $36.5 billion. The sky was falling, people thought, right? The next year, it was $37.5 billion. That was the one Rauner said, oh, this is a good budget. That was a billion more than the one that ended the budget impasse. Rauner leaves. Pritzker comes in. His first budget is $40 billion. The second budget that he had last year was $42.5 billion. This year's budget proposal is $45 billion. So $2.5 billion more than even last year. The whole thing that got us in trouble from 2011 to 2017 and a half was the fact that the Democrats could not stop spending money. So the governor's budget proposal has increased, he's expanding programs and beginning new programs, and we should just be paying down our bills right now. So pay down the backlog of bills. Good, we're doing that. Susana Mendoza says that's happening. We're now in, I think it's 2 weeks now, where it used to be 2 years before a vendor was getting paid back. But let's pay down our pension debt. You know, we're going to actually plateau on our pension ramp shortly, and then we'll begin to go down. But we should pay that debt off. We should get ourselves to a position where we're healthy. Stop spending money.
All right, and we are out of time, but Senator, thanks for being with us.
Thanks
today.
For having me. Thanks for your patience this morning and my and getting here a little bit tardy. And my apologies to the listeners. You did a great job of building up to me getting here, and I hope this was helpful to everyone.
Definitely. We look forward to talking to you next month.
Sure. God bless.
All right. Senator Terry Bryant here on The People Speak. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Have a great day.